This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, good morning. Hope you're well.
Boker Tov. I wanted to share with listeners one of the army's responses to lessons learned from October the 7th. And the army has decided to create a new unit which will effectively be a rapid response combat force that will be able to handle infiltration, raids, terror incidents. And this is a force that's being put together under the auspices of the Air Force. And the name of the new unit is Arad. Arad meaning bronze. And the name has been chosen apparently because, of course, the association with a metal that has been used for shields and for weapons, but it's also a symbol that's connected with warfare, intelligence, and technology. And this is a unit that will be put through the harshest and the toughest training in order to get people battle ready and allow them to respond as quickly as possible to emerging incidents. They will be there very, very quickly, and they will be fully trained as to how to take control of the situation. Special training that they will get as a first response intervention unit to arrive at the incident, to isolate the scene, to engage the threat, to stabilize the situation until additional forces arrive. Here's the kicker. Arad will be manned only by women soldiers. That has been decided.
Wow.
This is an all-female
unit. So cool.
This is an all-female unit. And that will be ready for rapid response. So the girls out there who have aspirations to be combat soldiers and want to be really at the forefront of incidents and to get the best possible training that the IDF can offer, Arad apparently is for them.
That is actually unbelievable. Why would they say all women, all men? Are mixed units very uncommon?
Mixed units are not uncommon. There are many mixed units of different shapes and sizes. When it comes to combat units, it becomes a little bit more of an issue. And I think on this occasion, when it comes to combat, the IDF is particularly sensitive about sending women beyond the country's borders into combat.
Okay, got it.
And this is a unit that will be dedicated to responding to incidents within our territory. And so I think that therein lies the opportunity to give those girls who wish to be combat soldiers a real opportunity without having that concern about what may happen if they are beyond
Very
the
smart.
Borders.
Very, very, very smart. Really, just so cleverly thought through. An IDF deputy company commander was killed in Lebanon yesterday. What happened? How was he killed?
Yeah, so this is Major Itamar Sapir, who, of course, was a senior IDF officer, and he was killed in combat in southern Lebanon. And as opposed to many of the casualties that we've suffered in recent days and weeks as a result of exploding drones, Itamar's case was not one of those at all. IDF soldiers were operating in an area that had been already isolated and cleaned, and so were operating with relative safety in this particular area, which was an area that had been cleaned out from the Arab residents and the Hezbollah operatives, terrorists who were in that area. But it also borders on a Christian location. And the IDF has been much more gentle with the Christian towns and villages in southern Lebanon. They are not the target of the IDF's operations at all. The Christians are generally friendlier and have no reason to come into contact with the IDF because they really represent much, much less of a threat than the Shia Muslims who were in southern Lebanon, many of which purely with the intention of trying to challenge and to endanger Israel's existence. And unfortunately, Itamar was moving around in an area that he considered to be relatively safe. And the report suggests that Hezbollah terrorists were hiding in a church in the area nearby, which the IDF had considered to be clean and not present any threat at all. But these Hezbollah terrorists had obviously picked up on the fact that Christian towns and villages were being treated in a much more gentle way, and they took advantage of that fact in order to hide within this Christian area and in the church in particular when Itamar was fired upon and unfortunately killed in action yesterday. He comes from the town of Eli. However, his funeral will be taking place in about 10 minutes from now, just literally around the corner from where I am right now in my hometown. And residents have been invited to stand along the road that will link the family's home. In fact, it's the family of his wife. They will leave from the family home and will make their way towards the cemetery, which is very, very near to where I am right now. The really sad part about Itamar's death is not only that he leaves his wife, Roi, but also a 1.5-year-old baby who was named after one of his colleagues who was killed in the war before that. So this is a child, a young son that has been left who bears the name of one of the other heroes who were killed alongside Itamar. And he is now the 10th soldier killed in Lebanon since the start of the ceasefire, ironic as that might sound. But we are, of course, very, very, very devastated at this loss, as we are at the losses of all of our IDF soldiers and, of course, injuries that many of them carry, and we hope that they will all recover and back to full health. And, you know, many of us are really inspired by the strength of the determination to recover, how many people have lost limbs and yet have been determined to get back into the battlefield, to get back into the sports field, to get back to normal life with whatever injury, with whatever handicap they may be carrying. We are very inspired by the fortitude and the determination of these young men and women who come back from immense hardship in order to somehow rebuild their lives and to show us what determination really looks like. So our hearts go out to Itamar's family, to his wife and to his young baby. And we hope that we won't have to suffer this again, not now, not in the future.
Absolutely right. This is such an interesting article. I saw it in the New York Times. I saw it in on Israel National News. The New York Times claiming that the U.S. and Israel had plans or had a plan to encourage former Iranian president to lead the takeover of the current regime. Is this credible?
Well, the fact that it was published in the New York Times always worries me. As we know, the New York Times has lost all credibility. You know, the raping dog story doesn't seem to go away at all. And as you know, Howard, when the New York Times was given the opportunity to retract that ridiculous allegation and were threatened with a libel suit, they decided to double down rather than to withdraw from what is really a ridiculous allegation. And so therefore, whatever I read in the New York Times somehow is tainted by their position, their lack of journalistic standard, and their lack of honesty in writing that story and some others as well. But it is an interesting story because the person involved, the former president who is identified here as having been potentially tapped by the US and by Israel to take over the regime, is former Iranian president Ahmadinejad. Now, we all remember Ahmadinejad because he was so anti-Israel and was so vociferous in calling out the Zionists and calling out the United States and being very, very threatening towards Israel and the United States, which is another reason why I think that this story may well not be entirely credible. It is true to say that Ahmadinejad in recent years has been under house arrest. So he's been in conflict with the current regime, even though he was a member of the regime for many, many years and served as president for quite a long time of Iran, president of Iran for quite some time. And yet, I mean, he was there for 8 years between 2005 and 2013, and he repeatedly threatened to wipe Israel out. And he was a Holocaust denier, and he didn't, you know, hesitate to be anti-Semitic at every opportunity. And yet, because I suppose of his opposition to the current regime in more recent years, and the fact that he was even under house arrest that was imposed upon him by the current regime, that's why it seems that the New York Times might be able to stand up and justify that he was indeed the guy. He's someone who was within the regime at one point and has come into conflict with the regime in more recent years. And he seems a relatively obvious candidate, or potentially an obvious candidate who might be tapped by the US and Israel. But the story goes even further than that, because we do know that during the first few days of the recent war in February, March time, Ahmadinejad's house was actually bombed. And the New York Times is claiming that the reason that his house was bombed was in order to release him from house arrest. In other words, in order to get rid of the security detail that was put at his house to keep him under house arrest. The intention was to kill the security guards and to allow him free so that he could come out and effectively lead a takeover of the regime. It turns out that the booth that was outside his house with the security guards was indeed very much destroyed. But from the report of the New York Times, whether one believes it or not, it seems as if the Ahmadinejad himself was injured in this attack. There are suggestions that he's completely disappeared from sight since then and that he might have been killed. But the story, at least in the New York Times for now, says that he wasn't killed, that he was seriously injured, and that might have caused him to change his mind about being freed and then trying to lead a takeover of the regime. And I just wonder if any of this is true at all in the first instance, and if it is true, whether he might not have somehow hoodwinked the United States and Israel into freeing him. And then once he's free, he's, you know, also free to change his mind and do whatever he wants, rather than to lead a takeover of the regime. So I don't know whether any of that is true, but it's certainly a nice little story to go down in folklore, even if it's not true. I'm guess over time we will learn whether that may or may not have been the case. You know, one of the things that we've discovered about the current US regime in particular is there seem to be no secrets.
Yeah, it's actually quite incredible. Or I don't know, it's just so weird. Finally, the Israeli Navy has once again brought the progression of a Gaza flotilla to a halt before it entered Israeli territorial waters. I don't know. These stories just are bizarre. I just really can't understand what's going on here.
Well, it's all a publicity stunt, because let's be absolutely honest about it. Let's assume just for a moment that flotilla actually reached Gaza. What then? What would they do once they reach Gaza? What happens then? We've already proved that they have no humanitarian aid on board, even though it's kind of being billed as some sort of a humanitarian gesture. Once they get to Gaza, there is nothing there for them to do. And I just think to ourselves sometimes, I wonder whether the Israeli Navy shouldn't just call their bluff and say, off you go, get to Gaza, we'll help you ashore in Gaza, do whatever you wish to do while you are there, because there's really nothing to do. You have no aid to bring, you have nothing to contribute to the situation. There is no help that these flotillas are bringing to Gaza, except potentially just headlines in the press. And of course, anti-Israel statements. And I think that therein lies the real issue, is that this is all an attempt to somehow try to blackmail or to bring Israel's name into further disrepute. and they're hoping that when the Navy comes on board, that some incident will arise that will allow them to show how evil the Israeli Navy is in taking these people into custody. As it turns out, 430 activists were detained by the Navy when they took over this flotilla. One of the people in custody is, in fact, the sister of the Irish president, Margaret McConnelly. And she's come out saying how proud she is of her sister for helping Gaza. She's not helping Gaza, just in case you didn't realize that there is no help that is being brought to Gaza. But here's the thing that I really loved about the story. First of all, you know, I take my hat off to the Israeli Navy, who now seem to really have a system where they intercept these flotillas very, very early on, not in Israeli territorial waters, sometimes in international waters, or indeed in other territorial waters. On this occasion, it might have been within the Cypriot zone, territorial water zone, but they have a floating incarceration center that they put all of these people into, some sort of a prison on the water before bringing them ashore to Israel. They even played Michelle from the Eurovision through the sound systems of these flotillas. They managed somehow to intercept the sound systems, and they played what they wanted to through the sound systems on all of these boats. And of course, Noam Bitan's Michelle was blaring for all of the activists to listen to, as well, apparently, as Britney Spears' Oops, I Did It Again, that they like to play for these people who, and then, of course, they take over the boats very, very effectively and efficiently, and the 430 activists will be brought to Ashdod, or have been brought to Ashdod, and they will be deported in the way that they have before. It seems to be a very well-oiled operation, and very unfortunate that we have to waste our manpower dealing with this stuff so far away from Israel's shores, when we've got many, many bigger fish to fry than that.
Absolutely. Anthony Rach, that is where we leave it. Thank you. As always, we can catch Anthony tomorrow morning for the Israel Report at 7:45. This is also where I leave it. I have somewhere to be, so I'm going to pop off out of studio. Very, very kindly, Dylan Berger has offered, okay, I begged him, to step in or sit in for the next hour and to take you through the next hour from 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock. Just be nice to him, okay? Just be nice, because I'll find out. I really will. And then tomorrow morning when I'm back from 6 to 9, we'll have something to talk about. I'll see you then.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you're based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.